If you're ready to elevate your level of care and professional satisfaction, register today for the Trusted DPC event that can help get you where you want to go. With three physician-led tracks focusing on starting a DPC practice, growing a DPC practice, and clinical expertise within a DPC practice, the Direct Primary Care Summit has content for anyone, no matter where you are in your DPC journey. The DPC Summit is happening June 20th to 23rd in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register today at dpcsummit.org. Direct Primary Care is an innovative, alternative path to insurance-driven healthcare. Typically, a patient pays their doctor a low monthly membership and, in return, builds a lasting relationship with their doctor and has their doctor available at their fingertips. Welcome to the My DPC Story podcast, where each week you will hear the ever so relatable stories shared by physicians who have chosen to practice medicine in their individual communities through the direct primary care model. I'm your host, Marielle Conception, family physician, DPC owner, and former fee-for-service doctor. I hope you enjoy today's episode and come away feeling inspired about the future of patient care, direct primary care.
Direct primary care is practicing and loving medicine the way I thought I would when I dreamed of being a doctor and providing care for patients the way they deserve. I am Dr. Asia Harris of Harris Family Health, and this is my DPC story.
Dr. Asia Harris, MD, is a board-certified family medicine physician who owns and works at Harris Family Health, the first direct primary care clinic in her hometown of Flint, Michigan. She graduated from Georgetown University School of Medicine and completed her family medicine residency at the University of Illinois in Chicago. She focuses on improving health literacy and access through outreach work with her Black Fam Doc platform. Additionally, she does public health and health advocacy work within various local, state, and national organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Harris.
Thank you for having me.
I am so pumped because you are coming onto this podcast as a physician, as a person who wasn't a physician originally, and as an advocate for your patients in such a unique way and a much needed way. So I wanted to start off with a quote that you had said on your social platforms that I want to paint a better light for all the things that are happening at home.
Yes. So Harris Family Health is my direct primary care clinic. It is located in my hometown of Flint, Michigan. And so I came back home after residency and after all of my training to be an asset and resource to the community that raised me and be able to make the community of Flint a lot stronger, a lot healthier, and thrive in ways that we could never imagine.
And you've just celebrated your one-year anniversary. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much. 1 year, it definitely was an amazing year. I'm excited for this coming year. Definitely growing and learning more about myself, about the business, about caring for my community and the diverse ways that I can make an impact.
Love it, love it, love it. And it's so important to hear that for other people that even after you graduate medical school, you graduate residency, you can still carve your way out in life. You can carve ways out for your community that never existed before. And to highlight how you've truly carved out your way in life, your degree in undergrad was in chemical engineering. And then you decided to be a doctor. So you're one, super smart. And two, I want to ask, how did you go from chemical engineering to becoming a family medicine physician?
I get asked this a lot because it is a different switch. I know there's a fraction of people who are doctors who are previous engineers. And so it's not completely out of the norm, but it is a adjustment to what you thought you were going to do. And then you end up kind of being a medical doctor. But I've always been a curious person. I've always been into science and figuring out things. And that's kind of how I got into engineering. That was kind of what people are like, math and science, you should be an engineer. And it was a great plan for me. But when I got into undergrad at the University of Michigan, I realized during that process, I really enjoyed health and the biology. And I thought I was going to do health technology and like just be in the health field some way in an engineering standpoint. But then I realized through different volunteer opportunities, a summer doing an engineering internship, and I volunteered at an HIV and AIDS transition home. And from that summer, I realized I wanted to be directly in front of my patients, listening to them. And so after that summer, I came back and just kind of switched it up. I still finished my engineering degree, but I knew after my undergrad degree that I was going to try and apply to medical school and be directly patient facing.
I love it. And when you talk about, you know, you discovered this new way of delivering what you wanted to bring to the table through being in front of patients, I want to ask there, how was it that you also discovered this, you know, world of direct primary care, where, just to make sure that we call out, you were the first direct primary care in Flint, Michigan to exist. And I hope there are lots that come after you. But how did you go from, you know, a typical residency where we learn fee-for-service to then choosing DPC versus staying in fee-for-service?
Yeah, so there is a kind of nervousness, but also excitement when it comes to starting a direct primary care clinic in a city that's never heard of it. So I really enjoy being the first direct primary care clinic in Flint. But during the process of my first job after residency, I realized that I was caring for my patients as best as I could. I thought I was being a great doctor and they were having better health outcomes and I was addressing kind of different things through the system that I was in. But I realized there were a lot of barriers, that I wasn't able to do everything that my patients kind of needed. I was only able to kind of do what was within that system and that clinic. And I just felt really restricted. I felt like my patients deserved a lot more. And I know as a primary care doctor that most of the health that my patients are dealing with, or the health impact that my patients are dealing with, is outside of the clinic. And so that was one piece where I couldn't get outside of the clinic enough when I was working in my previous employment. And I also knew that the system was not addressing all the concerns that my patients had. And so actually, when I was in medical school, I did a family medicine rotation at a concierge clinic in DC. And so that was my first glimpse of like people having a membership and then people getting their primary care. I didn't know all the ins and outs of the business of medicine at that point, but I saw the time that people were able to spend with their patients, but I forgot about it. I was like, okay, that's a rotation. I saw some patients, got some good experience. And then I went off and went to residency in the fee-for-service kind of realm that you were referencing. But once I got out of residency and had my first post-residency job, that barrier and restriction kind of overwhelmed me. And I realized, in order to save myself from the burnout feeling that I was feeling, as well as provide better access and better opportunity when it comes to empowering themselves with their healthcare, I had to change it up. And so I kind of toyed with the idea of another fee-for-service clinic, but then I realized that it was going to get me back into the same hole that I felt I was in my last clinic. And so finding direct primary care, finding membership-based care really opened my eyes up to being the doctor that I thought I was going to be. When you think about the general practitioners of, you know, generations ago, they were right there next to their patients, caring for them, but they were also right there in the community. And that's my favorite part of my DPC clinic, is being able to care for my patients that are my members and but also care for my residents in the community by being a health advocate and an asset to the community.
It's so represented even on your website, where you have that one post where it says three things. I can't remember it exactly, so please help me out here, but it's like, I live in Flint. I love Flint. I doctor in Flint, or something like that. And it's very much, I am with you in terms of, I know this geography. I know what the barriers are to getting healthcare, and I know the healthcare landscape as a person who grew up in Flint. So when you talk about burnout, that you recognize that you had to leave the way that you were being, you know, the way that you were practicing medicine in order to avoid burnout, what did burnout look like specifically for you?
That's a heavy question. I think people don't realize that when you are a doctor, you have to still be a great doctor, even in chaos. And so that's what I felt that I was working in. And so when I was employed at my previous clinic, it just felt heavy. It felt like my favorite place in the clinic was with my patients in the patient room. And as soon as I left that space, like, it just seemed like the whole clinic and all the problems kind of just sat right on my shoulders again. And so in some moments it was physically painful. Like I had muscle aches and things like that. There were depression episodes, but what was one of the worst things about it was my family and friends saw it, and it kind of also took them down in the process of seeing me not enjoy something that I once enjoyed. And I was getting irritated at things that shouldn't have irritated me. I wasn't doing the things that I enjoyed outside of the clinic. And as much as I love the diversity of the family medicine clinic panel and the schedule, it wasn't as fun as it used to be. It wasn't as interesting. It felt like I was checking off boxes instead of being right there and present for everything. And so it had its ways and each day felt different, but the idea that I just wasn't really enjoying what I was doing as much as I was previously sat on me kind of every single day.
And that definitely adds up. And, you know, especially just putting out a fact here, you know, less than 3% of physicians are female and Black like yourself. And that is, it is not okay for any physician to be burned out to the point of, you know, the devastating things, leaving medicine, taking their own lives, you know, choosing to do something that is compromising their care while staying in fee-for-service. But with that statistic, it is so important that we make sure that when a person is in family medicine, especially when you're doing the jack-of-all-trades job, when you're doing all of the things that, you know, we get the punted, oh, see your PCP for pre-op, go to your PCP for your hypertension. Sorry, you can't get in for 6 months, making the PCP, you know, stress out while they're trying to get you care, but they can't get you in soon enough, like all of those things. It's so important to address the fact that, you know, this model, direct primary care, and the fact that you are now past a year, you know, into your direct primary care and living a very different life. It's so important for people to know that this model exists, because whether you're Black, whether you're Filipino like myself, whether you're Vietnamese, whether you're Sikh, it doesn't matter. But if you are a physician who absolutely can bring a change to your community because of cultural presence, because of language abilities, whatever it is, it's so important for people to know that this model exists, because this is a model that allows people to function the way that we wanted to function when we went to medical school. So I'm just so proud. And also, I'm so grateful that Flint has you as a community physician, born and raised and now practicing in Flint.
Yes, no, thank you. I appreciate those kind words.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, though, when you saw that, you know, this was not going to work out for you in fee-for-service, and you had, you know, you had experience in this concierge model of care, how did you learn specifically about doing medicine through the direct primary care model? And when in your fee-for-service journey did you decide, this is what I'm going to do?
It's definitely been a process to learn the business side of medicine, whether it was the direct primary care or fee-for-service. And so I think that was kind of where I first kind of sat back and realized, okay, what is the day-to-day that's happening after I click, like after I sign my notes, like what is happening? And so I started just paying more attention to my surroundings at my clinic. But more personally, when I was kind of at home and had my own kind of time, I was reading books on direct primary care specifically. I was looking at the direct primary care kind of resources, the websites. But I think most kind of regularly, I was in the direct primary care Facebook groups, which had a variety of questions of I'm thinking about it, to I've been doing this for years. And so I had a business plan that was probably, it was formally structured as a business plan, but it really became my like go-to resource, where everything I learned through the Facebook group, through the websites, through the books, it was just a line item in my business plan. And so eventually that became pages and pages of advice for me. As far as actually starting, I was previously a National Service Corps member. And so my job had me there for 2 years as far as a commitment. And so unfortunately, six months in, I was like, this is not really how I want to continue my career. And so I had over a year to really think about my next phase, because I unfortunately had just burned out that fast. And so in that time frame, I did my business plan. I was reading, I was learning, I was absorbing as much as possible. So that way, when I did finish my commitment and was able to step away from my previous job, that I could take a break to recover. That being said, my burnout took over a year, it feels like, to really recover. But I took the time to get all my stuff lined up, because you can't do things when you're employed. It's a little bit harder. And so I just waited till I stopped and then got things lined up and then eventually started my clinic. And so there's people who have started their DPC clinics very quickly. I was just one of those ones who just had time. And so I just took it and then was able to successfully start my clinic.
Amazing. There is no right way for a timeline to go in particular to open your practice. And especially now when we have the internet, there are so many ways to deliver care when you might be restricted geographically. I mean, Dr. Andy Brickowski is a great example of that. He's a quaternary specialist. Definitely go listen to his episode. But he talked about how his address is a floor below where he used to practice, but he's physically out of the non-compete range. I'm like, boom, that's the way to do medicine, man. Like, no barriers to care. So when you decided to open, at what point did you decide on Harris Family Health being the name of your DPC? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Your calls for more content have not fallen on deaf ears. I am so excited to announce the My DPC Story Patreon community. Delve into exclusive full-length interviews with pioneers like Dr. Neeti Kapoor, our inaugural physician guest, and get further enlightening insights from our current season's doctors, starting with Dr. Harpreet Sui. Hear our guests share even more, from their worst days to their best days and everything in between. Get access to this treasure trove of conversations and more by joining our My DPC Story community now. Check out the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan. That's patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan.
I know people have different reasons for their names, whether they put their name in it or don't. I'm such a family-oriented person that I love my family. I wanted them to be proud of something in the Flint community. And so I wanted Harris to be in there. And then just from that, it just built into Harris Family Health as far as the full name. But I knew that when people saw my name, I wanted them to connect it to the Harris family. I mean, I have Harris family and I have a Horn family, which is both my sides, but I wanted them to connect it to my family and my legacy and kind of build off of that as far as this is where Dr. Harris definitely is. And so that there was no question of who was in this building and who was providing care.
Love it. And definitely, you know, we'll talk about this, but definitely check out Dr. Harris's website. It's beautiful, like really, really beautiful. I kid you not. I was so blown away by how savvy it was and the colors and the images, just amazing. But it also, I want to point out here, Harris Family Health is a beautiful pair with your logo. So your logo is royal purple. It has the HFH. It is perfectly symmetrical. I love all the things. So it's awesome. Now, your office is located in downtown Flint, Michigan. So I want to talk a little bit about Flint itself and how you chose to have your office downtown. So can you give us a little bit of a feel for Flint in terms of, as a person who grew up there, did you go to downtown for, you know, your own healthcare when you were growing up? Is downtown a common place for people nowadays to go get healthcare?
No. When I was growing up, no one really went downtown. It was nothing really here. When my parents were younger, there were a lot more kind of stores because people were more physically buying things in person before the huge malls kind of came about. But when I was younger, I was really never downtown. As far as medical clinics here, there are a couple now, but that's more in the last 10 years or so. They haven't really been fully present like that. But once I left high school and was gone for college, the downtown Flint area kind of blew up. It expanded, got new buildings, got new tenants. And so it, just like any other downtown, it has its foot traffic, but it has a lot of just small businesses, just having kind of a place for people to come in and go. And so for me to open up a clinic in downtown, it's not the norm for medical offices to be down here. We have a lot of medical offices in the city and the county in general, but a lot of them in the city specifically were kind of clustered just outside the city in our business kind of district. And I didn't really want to be part of that cluster. There's all the same type of medical offices. You don't really kind of know where you're going. You kind of have to feel like you have to have a map to know exactly what building your medical clinic is in. And so I just didn't want that confusion. And I want to be a little bit different and give people a new experience because DPC is already something that a lot of people around here have never heard of. But I wanted a more kind of warm, cozy, artistic in some ways kind of space that didn't look sterile, didn't look kind of numb that some offices can have. And so downtown was very vibrant. It allowed me to diversify kind of the type of experience my patients will have. And I'm in a building that has never had a medical office. And so people don't expect it to be inside this building. So I love it.
And it also goes along with your whole branding. I mean, you have your royal purple everywhere, and you know, just the way you've used your space. There's a video of it on your social media. And when you look at it, I mean, yes, it could be, you know, any particular business in there, office-based business, but the way you've used it, can you describe your space so that people can, if they haven't seen your clinic visually, how you've separated a larger space where you have, you know, you can have a group meeting there, you've done interviews there, you have your hallway, you have your separate space where you have your exam table, as well as like a consultation area. But can you just visually walk people through what does Harris Family Health look like from the patient's perspective?
Yeah, so I guess I'll describe from the outside. So I am in one of the oldest buildings in our city, over 110 years old. It's at least over 100 years old. It used to be an old bank, which in the basement, the vault is still there. But I am in a large office building in the city that has a lot of character, a lot of history. You go down the elevator space, come up. And when you walk into my clinic, now I have a mini hallway. And so you enter, there's space to sit, but there's art on the walls. There's a sign that says everything is health, because I believe that everything impacts your health. And so all facets of your life are in some way connected to your health, whether now or in the future. From that hallway, there's the original portion of Harris Family Health, which is the patient exam room now. It has the patient exam table, chairs, supplies in general. The other space in the office is just my clinic, like personal office, where I just have a desk and my computer and things like that. Store a lot of outreach materials because that's one of the things I enjoy. And down the hall, there is the Harris Family Health Learning and Wellness Center, which is just an open space that has space for like talks as far as recording podcasts, doing events and that sort, has tables and chairs that I can pull out to have a pseudo classroom and just discussion space. And it also has art on the walls. So my entire office has local art from all Black women artists in the Flint area, just trying to create a space where they could display their art, sell it or not sell it, have it exposed during my events and other kind of events that I have in the space. Because I am a person who loves balancing art and medicine, blending art and medicine. Before I was a doctor, I've always been a poet. And so I've always enjoyed all these different art spaces. And I wanted to bring that into my clinic because I think it's beautiful, but also it's my clinic. And so I want to feel great in my clinic. And I hope that when my patients and visitors come, they also feel like this is a really cool space that I trust I can, you know, be myself in and address kind of other health concerns or whatever they're kind of specifically coming in for.
Going back to the fact that you grew up in Flint, when you think about how, you know, you just shared how you've personalized your clinic and how you've really highlighted that health is everything and it impacts everything a person does impacts health. I want to go back to your experience growing up in Flint. What was your access to healthcare like? And did you have any similar experiences in personalized clinics with the healthcare that existed when you were growing up?
So when I was growing up, I never had any experience as far as membership-based care. I always went to a pediatrician mainly for well child checks and things like that. It was just a small office, which a lot of clinics around here are just small, not very like large and expansive kind of clinics, which nowadays I feel like that has changed with how clinics are bought out by different people. But my experience was my mother and father taking me to the doctor for various things, but mostly didn't really go to the doctor unless it was something very serious and or required by the school, which I think is kind of how people experience primary care when it comes to students, that if it's not required, my kid isn't probably going to go. But I think it's hard for me to recall like all the things when I was a child, but I don't recall going to the doctor that often. My mother, she worked in a hospital system. And so sometimes it was her bouncing ideas off of the doctors and health providers that she talked to just to have a quick, should I really take her in or should I shouldn't? But there's been access gaps depending on where you live in the city. And I think that's still prevalent today.
Did you have the experience of seeing a Black physician when you were growing up, or did you see physicians who were not Black physicians?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you to Spruce Health for supporting the My DPC Story podcast. The ways we communicate have changed dramatically over the past decades, but technology and tools in healthcare have not kept pace. patients want more access and digital convenience, as well as the ability to text their care teams. Care teams are inundated with more communication and rising expectations, but are still using tools and technology stuck in prior decades. Spruce Health created a solution for the tech-forward DPC practice by creating a communication product designed to serve both the patient and the doctor through intuitive HIPAA-compliant workflows, tagging, scheduled messages, and triage templates ready for use, whether you're on your phone or in the exam room. New users get 20% off for the first 12 months of a paid plan with code MARYAL20. That's MARYAL20. So check out Spruce Health today at sprucehealth.com or check out the link in the show notes.
I saw physicians that were not Black physicians. If you ask some of the, like, my people my parents' age, they talk about back in the day when we had a lot more Black physicians in the Flint area. Unfortunately, those Black physicians were not really replaced by other Black physicians, so that number has dwindled with each coming decade, and many of them also unfortunately retiring in the last couple years anyway. So we don't really have that many Black physicians. I know that my mother's doctor when I was born was a Black physician. He also has children who are OB doctors. And so that is a strong legacy in the Flint area. But when you get out of the OB doctor kind of realm, we really don't have a lot of primary care doctors that are African-American.
I hope that your podcast and your story inspires other people to, you know, go into medicine, go back to their communities. That said, I want to ask a little bit more about Flint in general. We think about Flint and we think about, you know, Auto City, but that doesn't mean everybody has the same access via, you know, transportation. Could you speak to the reasons that cause the gaps in access to care in Flint?
Yeah, I think there's definitely multiple reasons, multifactorial, probably not necessarily unique to Flint overall, but I think because so many of them are happening in Flint, that may be something that hopefully will eventually be addressed. But it's definitely something that kind of upended the health access realm around here. We do have transportation issues. Flint is not a major city that has this huge public transit system. And so it's kind of the city that you probably need a car in, even though it takes 15 minutes to get from one end to the other on either direction. So it's not that large. But when you think about people not being able to get to school, get to work, get to their grocery store, getting to the health doctor is also on that list. And so transportation is its concern. We have a public bus system, but it, you know, that depends on where the line is and where you are in proximity to that line. We do have the consequences of the automotive industry, I'll call it. It's still kind of present, but not as thriving as it used to be. And so that has changed the financial situation of Flint significantly as it tries to figure out what type of opportunities will bring safe and good jobs to the area that will give people a living wage, but also opportunities to build on whatever visions and dreams they have. And so finances are always kind of a reason why people have some difficulty to access. We do have a high Medicaid population when it comes to health insurance. So there are some access opportunities, but when you don't have enough primary care doctors in the area, having the insurance that will allow you to do that is one thing. Not having a lot of direct primary care clinics like myself is one thing. And so we do have a shortage of doctors overall. But I also think that because of the history of Flint, from the water crisis to the automotive industry and the recessions before the rest of the nation kind of experienced them, does kind of highlight and stress the health system here. Because even when you are able to provide certain things, people have different reasons on why they aren't able to access that or follow through with something. Some of that is literacy, some of that is opportunity, and some of it is trusting kind of that will be beneficial versus it's just someone generically doing their job.
So let me ask you here, because, you know, this is a very pertinent discussion to have when we talk about Medicaid recipients. In California, it's Medi-Cal, the rest of the nation, it's Medicaid. What is the percentage of your population at Harris Family Health who has Medicaid as insurance for their health care, as well as a DPC membership under you?
Yeah, so I think it's about 20% or 25% of my patients have Medicaid. One of the beauties of the DPC clinic is that anyone and everyone can be a member. And so I do have a good percentage of Medicaid patients, Medicare, and uninsured patients in my panel overall. So there's a diverse options for people depending on what they're seeking.
And what would you say to the critics of DPC who say that direct primary care is a vehicle so people can cherry pick their patients? Because that is unfortunately a criticism that I've read on pretty heavy, you know, pretty well-known publications. And it makes it sound like we don't take anyone who's actually, you know, got a chronic illness or sick or actually needs care.
That's an interesting statement. And I've read that also. And my experience as a family doctor is I get patients who are more simple. They come in for screeners. They don't have a lot of acute or chronic issues. But I also get patients who have chronic issues that they haven't been able to manage well or just haven't had a great experience in the system. And on top of that, I've gotten patients who they've tried to get things addressed in the system and it hasn't been addressed appropriately, or they've been kind of blown off as like, that's not that big of a deal, or you're kind of making it up. And so as much as people think that we may be picking our patients, that's far from the truth. I'm a family doctor, and so I take care of children and adults, and I take them as they are, and I try and be a resource and asset for whatever is going on. And I know my scope and my limitations, and that doesn't change because I'm doing direct primary care. I'm able to do what I can with my knowledge and my skills, and then I refer and help them navigate the system in different ways depending on what their needs are. But I think that the most important and consistent thing that my patients have is that they want to feel more empowered about their health and they want to prioritize it a different way, that the current health system that majority of patients are within, it wasn't addressing their needs. And so I have great relationships with my current patients, and whether that is direct primary care or the FFS system, I know that I try and be a great resource and asset no matter how patients are coming at me.
Now, let me go back to this idea that there might not be trust in healthcare in general around the Flint area for all the many reasons that you've shared. When people decided to join Harris Family Health, can you talk to us about if people were a little coming to the table with that skepticism of like, what is this direct primary care business? Like, why would I invest my dollars in this membership? And is this going to be worth it in terms of me getting my healthcare questions answered?
Yeah, I think the most common thing that happens when people come for their first appointment is how refreshing it is to be in a space that feels like the person cares about you. Like, I don't know them yet, but my clinic environment already creates a space that people are about to tell me some of the things that they are not telling anyone else. In the doctor world, we get TMI, too much information all the time. Like, that's literally my job, is to get too much information and to ask people questions that they might not want to answer, but it's important for whatever next steps and recommendations that I make. But one of the things that I try and instill in kind of the environment and space and vibe of my clinic is I think time and trust are the most important things when it comes to being a doctor. If I don't have enough time with the patient, then they aren't able to tell me their concerns. If I don't have enough time, I'm not able to express my recommendations and vet out kind of whatever their concerns are. But in that same instance, if my patients don't trust me, it doesn't matter how much time I have, they're not going to say anything. And so my direct primary care clinic, but also just my style as a doctor, prioritizes time and trust. And even though people have had different experiences, I'm not saying that the health system that currently exists is the worst. I'm not saying that it is not going to be able to help people. I'm just saying there are some people who need a different approach to how they are accessing the health system. And sometimes they need a different asset, which I think that I'm able to be as their direct primary care doctor.
Can you talk to us about how your clinic has grown and what factors have led to growth of your membership at Harris Family Health?
One of the things, even though I worked in the Flint area for 2 years prior to my clinic opening, it was as if no one knew me at all still. I was within that health system. People made new patient appointments. Every once in a while, someone would refer a family or friend to me to help with their healthcare concerns. But when I started my direct primary care clinic, it was as if I basically just moved back home and no one knew that I was a doctor here. And so when I was starting, it was a lot of trying to be present in spaces. Part of it was just spaces that I already wished I was in, but I didn't have the time for. But some of it was as a new small business trying to integrate into the business world in our community, but also just into community kind of opportunity, so people would know that I was present. But as the last year has kind of gone, I've done different marketing things. I like to tell people that at base, I'm a small business owner. And so all the things that are helping and not helping other small businesses, I'm dealing with those challenges and those successes too. And so I've applied for different opportunities to have a billboard and to have a commercial and to get different exposures in our local kind of newspaper. But most importantly, I'm present in the community. And so my clinic has grown because of people seeing the classic marketing things, but it has more importantly, in my favorite kind of way of growth, grown from word of mouth, grown from people seeing me do some health education talk or do some outreach thing, which those I'm not necessarily doing to gather and promote my clinic. I'm doing because I feel the upstream impact of health education and health literacy work. And if someone decides that they want to check out my clinic, that's a added bonus. But I know very well that most of the people in the city are not going to be my patient. Like, that's just the reality of being a doctor. Like, you can't be everyone's doctor. And so my big thing is trying to be a community doctor and be an asset and resource. And so many of my patients have come from me just being involved in the community. And some of that involvement is formal health things. Some of that involvement is just me going to a festival just like they are, them seeing me present. And which is why on my website, it says I live and work in Flint, because a lot of doctors don't necessarily live in the same community that they care for. My office is not that far from my home. And I specifically bought a home in Flint because that was always one of my goals when I moved back. And so all these things are kind of coming together as ways that I've built my clinic over the past year and ways I've connected with my community overall. And I'm just kind of reaping the benefits of being present and being available and people slowly learning more about what direct primary care is and if it will work for them.
Now, I want to ask about pricing, because your pricing, you know, being the first direct primary care in Flint, Michigan, how did you determine pricing that would work for you and work for your members and community?
Yeah, so I know depending on where you are in the U.S., everyone has different kind of pricing, different cost of living kind of requirements. And so I based mine on what was generally happening in the DPC world as far as pricing, but more specifically what was happening in the state of Michigan regarding pricing. I originally had started out with like tiered base, where different age groups had different pricing as far as different age groups within adulthood. And then I realized that I just wanted to simplify my life even more and just kind of go with one adult price and one child price. But I ultimately settled or decided on the price based on what my cost needs were for my business and my personal expenses, but also kind of how many people I expected or wanted to reach as far as my patient panel size. Because I realized early on that I'm not a 600 plus DPC clinic type person. And that's because as I got more into like outreach and community work, I realized that I wanted to always have time for that. And so my price kind of reflects the fact that I want to be a clinician and be a personal doctor to many people, but I also want to be a community doctor and be out in the community. And so that's kind of how I got to my price range, just trying to get a spot where it doesn't feel like it's a complete stretch. That is, you know, not much more than the water bill, not much. It's, you know, in that same price range as internet and cell phones and stuff, that it was more tangible and not kind of out of reach for most people. And I think the diversity of my panel kind of shows that the price is not so much what is hindering the diversity. It's giving people an opportunity to see that, okay, I can have quality care for not that much.
And can you just run down just really globally, when you talk about being a small business owner and the cost of running a business, what are the things that, you know, that are included in your overhead? A lot of medical students and residents ask this because they're saying, oh, well, you know, how much money do I need to prepare for DPC or whatnot? So when you think about your own overhead, what are the components that are coming regularly for your overhead expenditures?
Yeah, no, I've gotten this question too from residents and medical students, because part of it is we don't teach the business side of medicine. And then the overhead is not even specific to medicine. It's really just business overhead. But it didn't take that much for me to start my clinic. I think I started with like $5,000, and a third of that was my medical license that I cost a lot of money. But my overhead, majority of it is my malpractice insurance and my rent. And with that, my clinic didn't start out very large. Like, I have multiple rooms now, but it was originally only one room. And that one room was $400 a month. And my malpractice was only a few hundred dollars a month. I've expanded now my clinic, but it's still within a good realm as far as not being too expensive. There's a lot of softwares that you kind of pay for. But what I like to tell people is I already went to medical school. That was the most expensive thing to do, the direct primary care clinic. That my medical license and the education that went behind that is the most expensive part. So if you come into the direct primary care mindset and world wanting to start a clinic, once you get your medical license, everything else is not, it's not that expensive. Like, my student loans are way more than what my clinic is costing me on a yearly basis. And so I appreciate that reality that it doesn't cost that much. And it's very humbling to realize that, okay, if so-and-so can do a business out of their garage or, you know, do something randomly and they haven't quite, you know, went to medical school or not necessarily medical school, haven't went to like business school. Like, people start businesses all the time. And the reality of a medical office opening, my malpractice and my rent are the most expensive things. And if you're able to regulate those, everything else is not that much a month.
Definitely appreciate you sharing that, because it I think it also just erases some of that black box of like, what does it cost to run a DPC, or what are the factors mm-hmm. financially to think about when opening a DPC? So now I want to shift to talking about how with direct primary care, as the way that you're practicing medicine, you're able to be a community doctor, and you are absolutely present when it comes to your Substack newsletter, when it comes to your advocacy. So can you share about the different avenues of being present in your community that you are involved in because of you being a DPC doctor and having the time to be present?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And over time, that list has gotten longer and longer because I realize how many things I enjoy doing. I am a full-time DPC doctor, but with DPC and the flexibility of it all, I'm able to navigate these different spaces with a lot of passion and excitement without the idea that, oh, I'm not taking care of my patients or this is going to stress me out. And so really it all has been balancing out and been a great opportunity. But as far as different things, the first thing I ever did kind of when I started my clinic was become a regular writer, a health columnist for one of our local newspaper, the Flint Courier News, which is one of the oldest newspapers in Michigan that's specifically Black owned. And so I write in that twice a month, different topics. As a primary care doctor, I really just like, oh, what have people been asking me lately? I'm going to write an article about that. And so that's been kind of cool and a way for people to kind of learn information. I have a passion for pipeline work when it comes to building our healthcare professionals in general. And so I wrote a book called 60 Plus Health Careers You Should Know About. It's specifically not just doctors, not just nurses, but every career that could possibly have a glimpse and connection to health is in that, from technicians to doctors to therapists to art therapy, music therapy, different kind of computer-based jobs and things like that, because I think we just have a shortage across the board. And part of the health career gap and shortage is the fact that people don't know these jobs exist. And so I wrote that book. In the same connection with that, with the pipeline work, I had a youth health summit called the Mindful and Motivated Youth Health Summit last year that had an opportunity for high school students to learn CPR. There's a panel of other doctors, medical doctors, physical therapy doctors, pharmacist, PhD doctors, the mental health component, just exposing students. So some of those students are gonna be like, nope, health is not for me. But there's also gonna be some students who are say, I really want to pursue a health career from that summit. I'm getting more into climate and environment work. I'm the new climate and environmental health director of the Young Gifted Green nonprofit that does work in Flint, but also in other cities across the country, especially for Black communities impacted by environmental and climate concerns and disparities. I have been doing a climate and health equity fellowship through the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health. And so that's an opportunity for me to learn more about environment and climate health. I have a Flint Health Hub newsletter that's kind of on pause right now, but it was a way for me to share health-related information to the community as far as stuff that was in our journals, but also responding specifically to different things going on as far as just like my thoughts on different health topics that were prevalent in the Flint area. This year, or kind of end of last year, I started the Flint Doc Talks, which is kind of a podcast, kind of a fireside chat, where I'm bringing community doctors in, as well as community health professionals indirectly and directly related to health, and kind of asking them questions and having a real discussion about concerns we have in the Flint area and things that people should know about. I've been doing different public health and advocacy work with the Michigan Academy of Family Physicians, and in part the American Academy for Family Physicians, as well as the National Medical Association. And that is probably more public health, health policy in the state and national kind of sense, because there's a lot of work that has to be done as far as the laws and policies that we navigate as doctors, but also that our patients try to navigate. So I try and be more present in those spaces because I have time, because I know what the consequence of poor health access is and what health disparities really look like. And so I try and voice in my experiences to those kind of spaces and opportunities. I recently started the EnviroFlint website on my own website to be specific about the environmental concerns and information that people in Flint should know about, whether it's air, water, land, and what our climate risks are as far as natural disasters and other emergency preparedness kind of things. More recently, which is I'm kind of currently in the series, the emergency preparedness classes that I'm doing. I think that the world is struggling. Like, it's getting hot, things are changing. And so as much as we talk about trying to prevent that, I'm also trying to prepare people for the reality that things are changing and making them reflect on how prepared they are for medical and environmental emergencies. And so that class has me teaching people CPR, teaching them basic first aid, talking about emergency preparedness emergency preparedness plans and kits, and kind of what you should be doing in different disaster settings. As far as the teaching people CPR and first aid, I think for me personally, I feel like people who are in education and people who are in health always are learning CPR as far as BLS and ACLS, but the community needs to know it too. Michigan actually has a high school law that high school students learn CPR, but that wasn't until 2016. That was years after I was in high school. And so most people, unless they're told that they have to learn CPR, may not have learned it. If they did learn it, it may have been a while. And so this emergency preparedness class is just the first stint of me trying to do more micro CPR classes, because I think that everyone should know how to do chest compressions. Everyone should try, and the opportunity that if it presents itself, I hope no one ever has to, but I want people to be better prepared and have that opportunity to feel like they could contribute to saving a life, because we know that most cardiac arrests happen outside the hospital. And if you are able to do CPR on someone, you increase the risk of survival by 2 or 3 times. And so there's a lot of things as a primary care doctor that I'm into, and it all kind of stems from health literacy work. And then being in a community that has a lot of health disparities, I'm really just trying to be an asset and resource. And so as much as I have my own things that I'm planning, I'm also available for people in my community to ask me to speak for things. And so I've done different talks for like small groups. I've done different talks for like mini conferences or mini events that people have had. And I really just want people to see me as someone who is willing to talk to people, has a way of explaining things that's understandable and digestible, but is excited to kind of spread information. If I just know all the stuff that I learned in medical school, that's not fun. I want other people to know it too. And so I've been trying to do a lot of things in the community as far as education work and just being available. Like, I feel like I'm approachable and a nice person. And I think that makes for a lot of great relationships and connections. But I think when people hear how I explain things and how it's not over their head, that I'm not talking beyond them, that I'm talking with them and trying to help them understand, I think that has given me a lot of opportunities to connect with the community and really trying to spread a lot of health information.
So if you are listening to Dr. Harris and you are applauding her beyond belief, you're not alone. Like, that is insane. And it's so awesome that you are able to do this when you came from a place where you're like, I'm physically hurting when I'm at work and I cannot do this 6 months into the job, to the amazing, impactful person you are right now. With all of the stuff that you are doing, what is your level of burnout, if it exists, compared to where you were before? Because you're when you're talking, you're smiling, you're alive, you're making such an impact. Are you experiencing any, you know, overextended, never ended type situation with your DPC being full time as well?
I would say no. It took almost a year for me to recover from the burnout that I was experiencing. And I say that trying to inform people that it's not going to be like a quick of the wrist or and just kind of turn over as far as, okay, I'm out of this experience. I'm out of this environment. Now I'm no longer burned out. And so it did take me some months. It took me a while, but part of that process and the journey was amplified and supported by the fact that I was doing things that I enjoyed. Last year, I described it as my year of yes. And I was able to say yes to so many things that I like that Asia just wanted to do or Dr. Harris just wanted to do. And so that gave me all these other opportunities. I didn't think that I was going to have all this long list of things to say a year into starting my clinic. But it just kind of happened that way as far as me realizing the things I enjoy, me realizing the skills that I had and kind of how that overlapped. I don't want to burn out again, but I want to enjoy every single day. I don't want to be, you know, waiting for the weekend to happen. I want this random Tuesday or this random Thursday to be a great day. And so I started doing things that I enjoyed. I started being involved in the community a lot more and showing up to stuff that I wanted to support. And then that, you know, gave me the opportunity to meet other people who were doing things that I liked what they were doing, and I wanted to support in whatever way I could, but also they wanted to support me and some of the random ideas that I thought. And once I got out of the employed like life, I realized that there were so many things that I wanted to do. Like I teach medical students now as the family medicine assistant residency or assistant clerkship director here in the Flint campus of Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine. And so I didn't think that I was going to be able to be involved in medical school like work like that, because it's hard to balance your own clinical work as well as academia. But because of how many things I've been involved in and how I've kind of managed my time, I'm able to say yes to things, not too much, but like say yes to a little bit of something and then see where it goes and kind of build from there. But I really didn't think that this was going to happen within 1 year of me going out on my own. I knew that I was interested in things, but all the yeses that I've gotten the last year have been amazing. But I think as much as I am doing a lot of things, I'm very aware of how my time is allocated. And I realize I am very afraid of burning out again. Like I just don't want to go through that again. And so this list of the things that I'm into is long, it's growing. I say yes, but I also say no, because I want to enjoy every day of my life. And I don't want to be in the same position I was in a couple years ago. But the joy you get from doing things that you enjoy is amazing. And I just want to keep that momentum going. And what I'm doing now may be completely different in a couple years. Like, I don't know. But I'm willing to adjust and adapt and see how it goes, but also prioritize my own peace and joy on a regular basis.
I love that. And I love that, you know, the people who are the medical students are seeing you and are, you know, they're getting that model of what primary care can actually be. And so that's absolutely priceless. Now, one of the things that you had done in your DPC journey is you had spoken at the American Academy of Family Medicine Residents and Medical Student Forum. And so I wanted to ask about, for those people who, you know, weren't aware that you did that talk, what did you speak specifically about, and how did you in such a short amount of time, because no speaker is given, you know, like this talk already is longer than unfortunately what you are given on stage most of the time. How do you boil down your message, you know, succinctly and concretely and, you know, fueled with the passion and the joy that you have experienced as a doctor doing this model of care, along with everything else that you have listed that you've been able to do?
That was a great opportunity last summer to talk at the student resident conference. And so they had asked me back probably this time last year if I wanted to be a guest speaker on it was a main stage kind of small talk. And so we all had less than 10 minutes to tell our story. And so everyone, the beauty of family medicine is that everyone has a different story, has a different kind of passion. And that's kind of the reason I fell in love with family medicine, is that every family medicine doctor has their own thing they really enjoy. And the common denominator is that they really are doing something they enjoy. And so I want to be part of that same group of people. And so this conference talk was just me talking on stage in front of the residents and students and telling my story from the engineering chapter to transitioning to like medical school, to then transitioning to a business owner in medicine. And so my story in that short time was about having the courage to kind of jump into new spaces and jump into new realms, and then realizing the growth and the beauty of kind of taking that risk. And so I just talked about, you know, obviously more details about different kind of pivotal moments, but I prioritize peace and joy now a lot more than I did years ago. And so a lot of things that I do, as much as it all seems kind of random and miscellaneous, is exactly who I am. I have a lot of other ideas that I'm waiting to kind of hopefully bring out in some form or fashion, but everything that I do right now is based off of peace and joy. And those opportunities to have that balance that I have right now is stemmed from the courage to take those different risks that, you know, people on the outside are like, why are you doing that? It's comfortable here, it's stable here, and like, it's fine. Like, you don't need, you know, peace and joy all the time. Like, just do what you got to do and go home or something. But I didn't want to live like that. And so all of my transitions have been me reflecting on what I really wanted and stepping out and trying something different. And so far it's worked out. But I also said in that conversation with the students and residents that years from now, I might change my mind. I might not be doing as much community stuff. I might get into more, I might pick one thing instead of doing so many diverse things, or I might, you know, open up and find out there's some other space that really kind of calls me in that moment and try it then. So we'll see. But I really try and prioritize the peace and joy, because I think that's super important to maintain our mental health, but also just enjoy life in general.
When it comes to the courage that you've had and you've shown up with and you've developed, when it comes to this peace and joy that you're also experiencing, I want to ask about this, the small business ownership roller coaster, because it is not always, you know, super peaceful and joyful on that ride. There definitely are ups and downs, or there can be. So I want to ask, at Harris Family Health, what, if anything, of a roller coaster ride have you experienced with your business in and of itself? And how have you stuck with it so that you've carved out this life of peace and joy that you are experiencing right now?
I definitely had a roller coaster, and that's how I describe it. I think one of the beauties, but also challenges of direct primary care is the fact that it is so new, and then so innovative, but it's also so new and innovative that a lot of people are not quite aware of the benefits or the opportunities they have with it. And so a lot of my challenges, just awareness and people not quite knowing what to expect and having some reservations on if they want to try it or not. And so that's not necessarily unique to DPC world. That's because small business life in general, like, you got to figure out what to say and what to do to connect more with people in order to get them to want to try your service, to try your product. But I think the roller coasters that I've had have all probably been based off the fact that from medical school to residency to post-residency, I always had a plan. And this is an unplanned chapter that I put on myself. And so I don't know what March is going to look like. I don't know what 2024 is going to look like. I don't know what 2025 is going to look like. And I've been previously had, you know, chapters where I knew where there was an end. You know when you're going to graduate medical school, when you're going to finish residency. For my health service corps commitment, I knew when that was going to end. Like, I knew all these things. And so that's been a transition as far as figuring out in this endless chapter that I'm in, because I don't know when the next one, you know, page might turn, what it's looking like right now and how I'm managing my emotions and my expectations. When I first started my direct primary care clinic, a lot of people talk about, you know, walking in with, you know, hundreds of people or tens of, you know, 20, 30, 50 people or whatever it may be. I didn't walk in with that many. I started my clinic with 5 people, and I had to have a lot of trust that that 5 people was going to turn into something that could cover my expenses. And then that could turn to something that I can kind of pay myself and then eventually, you know, cover my personal, like, all these things that every business kind of deals with, is like, you want to provide a good service and product, but also want to be able to support yourself as far as food on your table, mortgage, your car payment, all these things, but you want to trust the process. But you can't really trust the process always when bills come. Like, that's adulthood, is bills come every single month. You're like, I got it this month. Next month, do I got it? Like, and so that's a reality that I had to deal with constantly in over the last year, is like, what does the next kind of month look like? As much as I have people who are my patients right now, they can easily decide next month that they don't want to do this anymore. They can move, like, who knows? Like, so on a month-to-month basis, I'm not quite sure how many people are going to, you know, continue with my clinic and continue having me as their doctor. But more specifically, I'm just not quite sure what DPC looks like in Flint when I'm the first one who's been here. And so I appreciate all the people who have been my patients so far and who continue to ask questions and sign up and support this new business. But more importantly, they're prioritizing their health in a different way. And so as much as I think about the business side, I think about the fact that I'm caring for people on a regular basis in a way they want to be cared for conveniently and thoroughly, despite the fact that internally I'm always like, oh man, like what is going to happen? But I've gotten a lot of, you know, great connections and support throughout the year as far as small business aspect, because no matter what the small business is, it's going to go through different trials. And I can't say that the roller coaster feeling goes away. It just goes in different ways. And it's funny because like everything, a chunk of the things that are happening right now in 2024 is because my roller coaster was intense in November. And that's right, also where my birthday month is. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This is kind of tough. This is getting difficult. I mean, I was always almost at my year point, but I was like, this is not the year that I thought it was going to be. But then I have to recognize the growth that I had over the year. Like you started with no one and now you have enough people to cover your expenses. I shot my shot. I have to recognize that's how I got the community and environmental director job. And it was like, I have the time and the passion and my clinic is going to grow how it's going to grow. And I balance things out because not all small businesses are able to just go out on their own with additional support. And I didn't have a side gig part-time job because I had burned out so hard that I was like, not doing any clinical work for anyone else. I'm only doing the work myself. So I had to be more creative with different opportunities that were non-clinical that would support me kind of financially, different spaces that I didn't think that I previously would be able to be in.
That's awesome. And I just, as you were speaking about this roller coaster in the beginning, one of the things that I will say for the audience is the other Dr. Harris, who has been on the podcast, Dr. Erin Harris down in Atlanta, or in the Atlanta area, she's in Peachtree City specifically, but definitely listen to her episode also, because she talks about how she had 5 patients for a very long time, not just in the first few months and opening. So this roller coaster manifests in different ways, as you're saying, for everybody. One of the things I want to ask you now just gets into like the voice that you have found and amplified in yourself and that you could potentially inspire other physicians with. And I say that because I read this statement when you were doing work with the National Medical Association after your experience there, or maybe near the end of your experience, you said this quote, "I didn't think people wanted to hear from a young doctor from Flint. I didn't think my passion for public health and health policy work would have me in positions to speak confidently, despite not having an MPH or something else. I didn't think I was experienced enough, but here I am, one step closer to being at the table, even if I have to build it myself." And so now the powerhouse that you are, when you are making sure you're protecting yourself, you're protecting yourself from burnout, you're protecting your life that you're carving with peace and joy at the forefront. I want to ask about when you hear other physicians, you know, maybe having self-confidence that is on the low side, or they're doubting, you know, continuing medicine in a particular way, especially because you're working with medical students and residents who are more aware, I feel, than our generation of doctors. You know, they're more aware that this system is, that there are issues with it from the patient side as well as the physician side. So when you're talking to people and when you're talking to yourself, how do you recommend people listen to that bright light, you know, the pilot light that's inside of us, and nurture that voice, nurture that light so that it propels us in positive ways forward?
That's such a good question. I love the quote that you pulled. I forget when I said that, but I've said it multiple times that I felt that I was not qualified for a lot of things. And that feeling of the imposter syndrome, I mean, that started when I was younger. I mean, I went into engineering, which we talk about there not being that many Black women doctors. There's also not that many Black engineers. And so I've had to exist in kind of move in spaces that didn't have a lot of people like me for a long time. And even outside of the qualification aspect. So now I'm a full doctor. I practice medicine. I stay evidence-based. I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And that is kind of the reality of being a doctor who's trying to be present and up to date, but also be humble enough to know that there are, you know, other people who know other things that I don't know. But I think when I was burning out, part of the motivation of starting my own clinic was I felt powerless in my burnout. And so I really wanted to take that power back. And in the process of planning to open up my own direct primary care clinic and then eventually opening, now I have so much more confidence and power in who I am and what I can bring to the table. And in that same context, like I said, I don't mind coming to a table, but I also don't mind building my own. And I realized that there were a lot of gatekeeping in different spaces and just like people being naive or just unaware of the diverse opportunities that other people can bring to the table and bring to the conversation, which is kind of why we have so much, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion kind of initiatives, is because people are not bringing other people into the space and the environment to support the cause, you know, change up kind of what's happening, give other kind of recommendations and discussion kind of points and stuff. And so as I gained my power and realized what I wanted to do and recognized the qualifications or requirements that people were putting on these different spaces, I realized I didn't want to do those kind of more formal things like an MPH or some training just to say that I had it, when I knew that I had experience and a passion to do, you know, do various things. I do health talks, I do outreach. A lot of this stuff is stemmed from my personal passion and not because someone has told me to do it. And now people are watching. Now people are like, oh, okay, so you can do that without this. You can do that without kind of this, you know, organization supporting you or this person kind of co-signing. And I feel like a lot of the medical students that I work with, every single time that I talk to these different students from the clerkship, I want them to feel power now. I want them to feel like if they feel there's a concern with a patient experience, they feel there's a concern in their community and the society, that they are adults. They can say something. They don't have to wait till the degree confirms that they are knowledgeable enough, because our experiences are just as important as, you know, having some expert knowledge. And I feel like, which this probably stems from our generation being told that we should go to college and get this and that, and then it didn't really work out that way, that you needed that college degree to do, you know, certain things. And so I feel kind of tricked in that way. But I feel, because of the route that I've taken into medicine, that when you realize how much power you have, whether it's patient advocacy or community work or policy work or, you know, being involved in academia, whatever it may be that you are kind of gaining your power in, it's valuable. It's an intentional kind of move for you to speak up about something. And I don't like people feeling that they have to feel silenced, because like I said, a core of my burnout was feeling powerless, and I didn't want to feel that way. But I knew that my experiences, being someone who was born and raised in Flint, my experience being someone who wasn't initially thinking about medicine, someone who knew that I was going to use my primary care training to come back home, I knew all these experiences were intentional and were placing me in spaces that I didn't plan on being in, but that those experiences were valuable for me to be an asset to whatever conversation or kind of initiative. And I hope that anyone who is listening feels that they have something to contribute always, that they have an opportunity to learn and then contribute even more, that people should not feel belittled or feel that they don't belong in a space, that everyone has the right to be somewhere. And if you have a vision, if you have an idea, if you have something that you really want to do, that there are a lot of ways, and that first no is not the end all be all, that no is just another, it's just one person saying no, and that there are other spaces. And even if you aren't able to get a yes from someone, you're able to do it yourself in whatever way is possible. That doesn't mean that you have to stop just because someone else is not supporting you, because I mean, I wouldn't be an engineer, I wouldn't be a doctor if I believed all the things that people were saying, but I knew what I wanted and I knew kind of the type of person I wanted to be. And my goal right now is to be a really great Flint community doctor. My goal right now is to be a really great friend, sister, aunt, whatever it may be. And those are just things I personally hold on to. And I'm not letting other people kind of take that away from me, because like I said, feeling powerless is the worst. And it just leads to so many other things. But take your power back.
And absolutely taking it back you have. Thank you so much, Dr. Harris, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Hear even more exclusive content now from Dr. Harris directly by heading on over to our Patreon community. Hear her discuss the process of crafting her clinic's mission, vision, and values, and discover how these core principles evolved and continue to drive her practice forward. She also opens up about the power of community and family support in her journey, and the strategic choices she's made for her clinic, like the Zero Down membership offer. Plus, get a behind-the-scenes look at how Dr. Harris planned a groundbreaking health summit for high school students, creating an impactful legacy in health education. Don't miss these invaluable lessons on building a healthcare practice rooted in connection and intention. Join now for all this and more, including exclusive full-length interviews filled with updates on previous guests, only at patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan. Follow us on social media to find out more about our next guest. In the meantime, I'd greatly appreciate if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to help others find the pod. And for DPC News on the Daily, check out dpcnews.com. Until next week, this is Marielle Conception.